Since Russia's invasion of Ukraine on February 24th, countries around the world have responded with sweeping sanctions. NATO countries fearing that any kind of military engagement in the conflict could trigger a fully-fledged war with the rest of Europe and its allies have opted for an economic offensive instead. Countries around the world have frozen Russian assets. They've barred the majority of Russian banks from the SWIFT international payment system, and they've sanctioned Russian oligarchs and more. New restrictions intended to cripple the Russian economy are being announced on a near daily basis, and the ruble's value has plummeted, with economic forecasters predicting the Russian economy will shrink by 7 to 15% this year. But will the aggressive sanctions be enough to stop Russia's war in Ukraine? And what impact are they likely to have in Russia and across the world? Joining me to discuss this is Sergey Guryev, economist and scientific director of the Master and PhD programs in economics at Sciences Po Paris. Thank you so much for joining me on Upfront. Russian President Vladimir Putin has called the Western sanctions on Russia, quote, akin to a declaration of war. Meanwhile, the U.S. and the EU are escalating sanctions, including a ban from the U.S. this week on Russian oil and natural gas imports. And yet, as civilian casualties in Ukraine continue to rise, many are saying that the sanctions actually aren't even enough. Where do you stand on that?
I do think that sanctions are not enough in the sense that behavior has not changed. Vladimir Putin is doubling down on the war. And initially, the sanctions were a deterrent, then an instrument to change behavior. And now the situation is changing in the sense that Putin says, I will not stop. I will bomb Ukrainian cities. I will try to capture Kyiv and change the government in Ukraine, even though occasionally he says, no, it's not my goal. But overall, right now, sanctions are to increase cost for Russian economy, for Mr. Putin, and make sure he doesn't have enough financial resources to continue the war. Now, Mr. Putin has two fronts. He has unhappy Russians at home who are hit by the sanctions, who would like to protest against the war because the war is actually quite unpopular. It is not a provoked war. It's, as President Biden would say, war of choice. And the front in Ukraine. So he needs a lot of money to pay his policemen in Russia to beat up protesters, to pay his propagandists to convince whoever can be convinced that this is a just war and defensive war, and then, of course, to pay his soldiers in Ukraine. And in order to make sure that he doesn't have enough money, indeed, U.S. has now hit the most important source of currency and budget revenues, which is oil exports. And U.S. is not a big importer of Russian oil, but U.S. has been joined by the private sector. This is very important to understand. Private companies like Shell or BP or Maersk do not have to stop buying Russian oil and transporting Russian oil, but they do. They have actually self-imposed sanctions on Russian oil, which is now becoming toxic for reputational reasons. And in that sense, right now, Russian oil exports are disrupted, and therefore, Russia is being deprived of those resources. But there is now a debate that Europe should join American embargo, and that would really hit Vladimir Putin hard because Europe is the main market for Russian oil and gas.
The ruble is now worth less than one U.S. penny. We've seen long lines of Russians waiting for ATM machines. We've seen predictions that Russian inflation will hit up to 17% this year, and people are stocking up on medicines, about 55% of which are imported. Do you believe that the hardships that are being imposed on ordinary Russians as a result of the sanctions will be effective, if anything, in fueling dissent against Putin? Or is his hold on power so strong that it won't matter?
So regimes like this change behavior or get replaced through two sources, a palace coup by the elite, or indeed by mass protests when the policemen don't want to shoot. And so Mr. Putin is afraid of both. Elites are very unhappy. Imagine you've been building a company for 20 or 30 years and it's destroyed in 1 week, which, for example, has happened to many Russian businesses. Now, with the population, as you rightly said, population's unhappy as well. But then again, Mr. Putin is smart here. He plays divide and rule with the elite and threatens jailing and poisoning them. But also he invests a lot in brainwashing the population, saying you're suffering, but this is economic aggression by the West, and we are innocent, we are a victim. or he also invests in riot police. And so you're unhappy about the fact that your deposits are frozen and you cannot afford the medicines. And I think that you pinpointed a very, very, very important issue, because for many Russians, the main two consumer expenditures are food and medicines, and medicines are important, and whichever are not imported are also priced to reflect the global price of medicine. And so in that sense, real Russians are now going below the poverty line. But can they protest against that? The answer is no, because Putin's police is still well paid and happy to beat up the protesters. And so unless Mr. Putin is deprived of fiscal revenue, which is petrodollars in the end of the day, he will double down.
Another piece of this is the impact of economic sanctions, not just on Russia, but on the broader global arrangement of power and global economic circumstance. The Wall Street Journal recently predicted that sanctions will have, quote, the biggest impact on the global economy of any such moves since 1945, because of the sheer size, of course, of the Russian economy. We're already seeing fuel prices rise in the EU and in the United States. The question, though, for many, including myself, is the price of sanctions worth the cost that they'll have for the rest of the world?
Well, as they say in Russia, remember those happy pandemic times, right? So this is much bigger than COVID. Huh? This is in Europe. People think about this as 1939. And indeed, already now we have more than 2 million refugees from Ukraine. That's bigger than the refugee crisis of 2015-2016. And the expected number as of today is 5 million. This is the biggest refugee crisis in Europe since 1945. And on top of that, Mr. Putin has nuclear weapons. And so in that sense, it's really a historic moment, which is somewhat similar in 1939. And so a lot of countries say, whatever the price of sanctions, we need to stop this aggressor, because this aggressor is not going to be appeased. And this, indeed, this is true, because Putin invaded Ukraine in 2014, and people thought, well, he's got what he wanted. That's fine. He'll go back, and he'll never invade us again. But what has happened? The problem is, if you appease an aggressor like in 1938, you may get another aggression and yet another aggression. And that's why the West tries to fight this battle. Now, you're right that people talk too much about the pain of higher oil and gas prices for Europe, but it's going to be a much bigger pain for developing countries which don't have such big coffers and access to debt markets. And on top of the oil, there is also grain, because both Russia and Ukraine are biggest exporters of grain, and those exports will be disrupted for sure. So things like oil prices, grain prices, some other things, and of course, this massive refugee flows, these are not outcomes we would love to see. But the alternative is that there'll be more crises like this, because, as I said, Mr. Putin has shown he doesn't like peace. He prefers war to cooperation, trade, and investment.
Do you believe that the international community is able to offer Moscow an exit strategy from the crisis? And if so, what does it look like?
So there'll be a negotiation at some point when Mr. Putin runs out of resources and cannot continue his offensive anymore. There will be some kind of negotiation. And indeed, Mr. Putin will probably want to come back to Russian voters and say, we won. And so this is a big question, how to define this victory. Ukraine will never recognize annexation of Crimea or independence of Donetsk and Lugansk. If Mr. Putin grabs more land, Ukraine will not recognize that this land is not Ukrainian anymore. But what may happen is a frozen conflict, a de facto occupation of part of Ukrainian territory. And depending on Ukrainian resistance, which is, of course, beyond belief, it's really, really brave, this grab of land may be big or small. We don't know how much Mr. Putin will be able to progress, how much resistance he will see. Maybe he will be pushed back to pre-war line of separation, line of conflict. But this is something which is very hard to predict. Another thing which is happening is, outside of Russia, Russians actually say, this is not our war, and we will want to tell the whole world that Mr. Putin doesn't represent Russia. And that is also something that will help to push Mr. Putin back as well. We, for example, established the fundraising initiative simply called True Russia, the True Russia, where we Russians abroad fundraise for Ukrainian refugees to show that we don't share what Mr. Putin does. We don't believe that he killing Ukrainians in our name is something we should be blamed for. So we don't remain silent, and we will help Ukrainians who suffer from Mr. Putin. And I hope that Ukrainians will be able to defend their country.
Sergei Gureev, thank you so much for joining me on Upfront.
Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
That is our show. Upfront, we'll be back next week.